This is Night Call, the new nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tonight's subject, What Are We Doing in Vietnam? Part 3. Tonight's guest, Congressman Edward Hebert of the House Armed Services Committee with a hawk's eye view. You speak for yourself and ask your questions directly by calling Collect Night Call's national phone number, area code 212-749-3311, or in the New York area, 866-5010. Night Call's host in New York City is Del Shields.
Good evening. We continue with our week-long examination of the question, what are we doing in Vietnam? Our first two guests were a State Department spokesman who gave us our country's official foreign policy position and an outspoken critic of both our civilian and military posture in that country. It had been our hope tonight to present a Defense Department spokesman to give us the official military position. They appreciated our interest, but were unable to accede to our request. Instead, Congressman F. Edward Hebert, a Democrat of Louisiana, has graciously consented to undertake the role of Defense Department defender and unofficial spokesman. Congressman Hebert is the third-ranking member of the House Armed Services Committee and chairman of four of its subcommittees, including the ones on selective service and national defense policy. Congressman Hebert is standing by now to answer your questions directly at our national phone number, area code 212-749-3311. Remember, you may call us collect from anywhere in the country where you are hearing Night Call on our national telephone number. That's area code 212-749-3311. In the New York area, you may call us on 866-5010. That's local calls on 866-5010. Congressman Hebert, good evening, sir. Congressman? Congressman Hebert?
All right. There's difficulty on the line.
I see, sir. Good evening.
There's difficulty on the line. I can't hear you.
Can you hear me now, sir?
Very vaguely.
We'll take a short... Can we go to a promo and then we'll see if we can get him?
Your voice has faded. I can't hear you.
We'll try to correct to clear it up in just a moment, sir, and see if you can hear my first question. Our guest last night, Mr. William Lederer, says we are losing the war. Is this true? Did you hear the question, sir?
No, I hear you very, very vaguely, but I'll try to talk over the difficulty. First of all, let me correct one presentation, and that is in your statement that I think now it's cleared. That is in the statement that I would present the Defense Department's view even informally. I do not speak for the Defense Department informally or formally, and do not in any sense of the word present anything the Defense Department has to say on the subject. I speak solely for myself, because I'm in total disagreement with many of the Defense Department policies in Vietnam, and particularly since when Mr. McNamara was Secretary of Defense. I speak so in no way presenting as a defender or a champion or an apologizer for the Defense Department. I can only express my own views. Now, as to the question of, you said, Mr. Lederer last night said we're losing the war. I disagree entirely. We're not losing the war. You can't lose something that you control. We control the war in Vietnam. We win what we want to win, and we do not win what we do not want to win. So we are not losing. We are calling the shots. We're in complete control.
Is imposing a democracy in the best interest of all concerned right now in Vietnam?
Imposing a democracy on anybody in the world is not to the best interest of anybody concerned. We have no more right to impose a democracy upon a people than a people have a right to impose upon us their form of government.
What would, in your opinion, sir, what would the United States consider acceptable terms for ceasing hostilities in Vietnam?
I cannot speak for the United States again. What we are trying to do is to bring the enemy to the negotiating table and to negotiate an honorable peace. That is the objective both of the so-called doves and the so-called hawks.
Could you give us the areas that you are disagreement in, that you are disagreeing, rather, with the administration?
I am more in agreement. disagreement with the administration at the moment than I have been in many years. I was in total disagreement with the manner in which the war was conducted in the very beginning. I believe that when you pull a gun, you should be ready to pull the trigger. We did not. We fought a war not to win, but to hold. I do not believe in that. I believe if you're in war, you're in war to kill or be killed. You're in the war to win or to lose. This war, we were not in to win. We weren't in to lose. We were merely in to hold. I do not believe in that type of action. I also believe that we had taken the proper course, had fought the war as it should have been fought, that many lives would have been saved, and many of our boys would be home today.
Some critics have raised the question that constitutionally we have no right in Vietnam. What is your view?
Constitutionally, it's a play on words and technicalities. I voted for the Gulf of Tonkin Bay, which is the resolution which gave the president the authority to use whatever force at his command. And unless I misread the English language or do not know it, every force at his command means to fight. And as far as I was concerned, the Gulf of Tonkin, or the Tonkin Bay Resolution, had effected full declaration of war.
Is this the resolution that gave the president a blank check in Vietnam?
That is correct. I voted for it, and I knew full well what I was doing when I voted for it. It had only four votes against it in both the House and the Senate.
Congressman, we'll begin accepting some calls from our nightclub listeners, and we'll accept our first call from Jacksonville, Florida. Mr. Dunlap is listening to Night Call over WRHC. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
This is Bernard Dunlap of Jacksonville, Florida.
Yes, sir.
About the Vietnam War.
Yes, sir.
I feel as though after we are in the war, we don't want to sign no peace treaty. We want to go through with it. And these men who run into a president office say they can stop the war. I think if they can stop the war, they ought to give him a hand to save some of our boys' lives and then run on for president. If they can say, well, then I'm elected president, I can stop the war. Well, they can do it now and help him and then run for president also.
Do you
understand?
You're asking me, do I understand?
I just don't
quite get the import of your statement or your question, whatever it is. Anybody can make a declaration that can stop the war. Nobody can carry through on that declaration.
Yeah.
Now, I do not get the import of your question.
But what I mean by they are saying they can stop the war.
Well, I
if
don't...
If they are these men who are running for president, they can stop the war.
Well,
if they were president.
Well, I don't think any one of them have said they could stop the war. They have tried, they have said they would attempt to stop the war.
So why they can't attempt to stop it now while this man is in?
You have me completely confused because your statements are not statements that elicit a factual statement. Only one man is the president of the United States.
Yeah.
If he could stop the war, he would stop it, I'm sure.
No, but the men who were running for president say they can stop it. They want votes. They say they can stop it.
Well,
they were president.
Well, that's something that I can't answer what they say.
Yeah. But the way they feel about it, if they can stop the war, if they were president, well, why don't they come in now and help stop it now and see if some of these boys
are obviously, the people who are running, challenging for the presidency have no power except to make a promise.
But if they can make a promise, they can do it now and help.
Well, sir, I think this is an election year, and I think always you'll find many candidates making many statements, and of course this is their right to state whatever they feel will fall on sympathetic ears so they can perhaps be elected, but this is all part of the American system.
Yeah, well, all right, well, thank you.
Thank you for calling, sir. Mm-hmm. This is Night Call in New York, and we continue our questioning this week. What are we doing in Vietnam? And our guest tonight calling in from Washington, the Honorable Congressman F. Edward Hebert. We'll take our next call from Cleveland, Ohio. Mr. Lippitt is listening to Night Call over WERE. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Yes, Congressman. During a declared war, it's my understanding that aid and comfort to an enemy of our country is treason. What would you call the aid and trade being promoted by President Johnson and others in our government with Russia, Poland, and all the communist bloc during an undeclared war? Would you call that undeclared treason?
Well, no, I certainly would not call it undeclared treason on the part of the president or anybody else. Even during a declared war, or war declared, whichever way you want to put it, the trade or institutions are very flexible, and I certainly do not think that the President of the United States is guilty of any treason.
Well, I can't understand why when 80% of all of the goods shipped to North Vietnam comes from the communist bloc of nations, why our country continues to give them trade or aid, unless it's for the fact that the people in our State Department, like Secretary Rusk, who called Mao Zedong the George Washington of China, is pulling the wool over the American people's eyes. And I know that millions of people have sent in requests to stop this aid and trade, and I hope that the Congress gets some guts and puts a stop to it.
Well, of course, now you're covering a very broad field and throwing a high umbrella over a broad area. When you talk about the Congress, I voted against aid to any communist country. I disagree entirely with the position of the administration in many areas, but I do not subscribe to your statement. This is treason. I disagree with the administration. I think my voting record in the Congress indicates such. And I think it's a very horrible situation as we coddle the people who are not our friends. And I think it's a very serious situation when we allow many things to happen, but certainly after George treason to the president.
Well, I don't know what term to use when you give aid and trade to governments who are shipping bullets to kill our own sons. I can't think of a word to describe it.
I think it's more treasonable for what's happening on the streets of America. I think it's treason when people get up and talk about the draft laws. I think it's treason when individuals get up and denounce our appearance in Vietnam. I think it's treason when we fight against our own country in our own areas. That, I think, is treason. I think it's treason that is not being punishable when we have an attorney general that does not enforce the law and refuses to enforce the law. That, I think, is more damnable and more treasonable.
Well, according to Andrew Tully, he stated a Justice Department source said today the White House is suppressing a secret FBI report which calls the anti-war protest at the Pentagon last October 21st communist-directed because Attorney General Ramsey Clark has persuaded President Johnson its release would not be, quote, in the public interest, unquote. Evidently, there's a terrible news blackout in this country, and the people are not being told the truth about many things that are going on.
Well, I can agree with you on many, though not the extreme manner in which you express it. I think the American public, instead of being the most informed public, is the most misinformed public in the world. And as far as whatever the individual that you quoted, I'm not familiar with what he said, so I cannot quote on it. But I do think that Mr. Hoover has, on repeated occasions, indicated that the demonstrations in the streets have been communist infiltrated, and my own opinion is that they have been communist infiltrated.
Of course, Mr. Hoover is the head of an investigative agency, and if the Justice Department does not use the information provided them, whether it's to prosecute people like Rap Brown or Stokely Carmichael, or for that matter, security risks within our government, there's nothing the American people can do about it.
Well, I think you're talking in an area now which I'm thoroughly familiar and knowledgeable and certainly capable of talking about. As I told you in the very beginning, I think that the great tragedy of our time today is that we have an attorney general who refuses and fails to prosecute the law. This matter has come up before. I'm on the Armed Services Committee. I was very active and have been active, of course, in any legislation for it, but we had Mr. Fred Vinson Jr., who is the son of a former Chief Justice of the United States, before our committee during the draft hearings. And during those hearings, Mr. Rivers, the chairman of the committee, and myself tried to press Mr. Vinson as to why the Rap Browns, the Stokely Carmichaels, and the Martin Luther Kings were not being prosecuted in this country for what they were saying. And every time we made a mention of that situation, we were told they came under the First Amendment. In desperation and aspiration, I mentioned, let's forget the First Amendment, not meaning forget the First Amendment per se, but let's put that aside and let's talk about this situation. Every newspaper in the country, including New York Times and Time Magazine and everybody else, excoriated me for saying let's forget the First Amendment. None of them ever said what I really said. And when I read the law on the books, which is on the books now, the law that's on the books now to Mr. Vinson, his reply was, I'm unfamiliar with that statute. And I asked him, what did you say? He said, I'm unfamiliar with that statute. So when we have this attitude on the Department of Justice, only yesterday I was called by the Department of Justice, a man speaking for Attorney General Clark, and asked, couldn't I go along with the gun control bill? My reply was to tell Mr. Clark that if he enforced the law, we wouldn't need any gun control bill.
Congressman, and thank you so much, Mr. Lippitt, for calling. We must break for station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Congressman Edward Hebert after station identification. Listen to the voices of Night Call.
We're trying to bring about change in this nation through nonviolent channels. Now, if we cannot do it through nonviolence, there are other forces that are going to lead people down a violent path, and the nation will be destroyed.
Ralph Abernathy on apathy and violence. And a white industrialist says jobs will save us from a racial inferno.
It's better to learn and earn than to burn, baby, burn. Now, these are the changes in attitude that spring from the community as a whole to try to work with these people, not just work on them, and to have industry reach into the area and try to recruit and hire the guy that's qualified and to get the other fellow to take training so he, too, can get a job.
Speak for yourself on Night Call. Speak for yourself, collect on Night Call. Area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010. To Congressman Edward Hebert about what are we doing in Vietnam. Again, Del Shields.
Congressman, prior to station identification, you stated that the Attorney General refuses to uphold the law, and you made reference to Dr. King and Stokely Carmichael and H. Rapp Brown. Now, in what ways have the utterances or the statements of these men been illegal or been against the Constitution or the laws of this country?
In my opinion, and I do not have ready right here the citation of Code 10 and the section of Code 10, it sets forth very clearly and precisely that anybody arousing to rebellion and anybody that who incites riot, it's a treasonable act, and it also sets forth all the conditions under which these individuals arouse people, and says in time of war, it says in time of war in the act that I'm referring to. I think it's section 10.3.3.3 or something. Anyway, it doesn't make much difference what the code number is, but it says in time of war, and the questioning that I was directing to Mr. Vinson, who represented the Department of Justice and was the Assistant Attorney General in charge of enforcement of the criminal code and the criminal statutes, we were trying to determine whether the fact that he was not enforcing this particular section of the law was related to the fact this is not informal declared war. And the return or the answer to that was that it didn't make any difference whether it was a declared war or not a declared war, that the question did not turn on that, but it turned on the fact that it was a violation of the First Amendment to pursue and arrest the prosecution of these people. In other words, the Justice Department was setting itself as a judicial body and prejudging on a judicial note what the courts would hold. As related, for instance, to the recent draft card burning decision of the Supreme Court, the Justice Department did not want the Congress to pass that law and did not give any assistance on the premise that it was a violation of the First Amendment. Yet the courts held that it was not a violation, but it was a violation of the law. And in my capacity as chairman of the Oversight Committee on the Draft, I intend very soon to have a public hearing on that particular situation to find out what the Justice Department is going to do with the draft cases which are now on the book and how far it is going to enforce the draft law.
Are we at war?
Of course we're at war.
Thank you. We'll take our next call from Champaign, Illinois. Mr. Fouts is listening to Night Call over WLRW-FM. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Good evening. I have a couple of questions for Congressman Hebert. First of all, I have heard estimates to the effect that it cost the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese about, what was it, $50 to kill an American or Allied soldier, whereas it costs us something like $375,000 to kill one of the Viet Cong or North Vietnamese. What is our difficulty economically in Vietnam? Why can't our forces do what they are supposed to be doing over there without bringing this heavy expense on the nation?
Well, of course, economically, in putting a dollar value on the how much to kill an individual, that's a play on statistics and a play on fiscal statistics. What the exact cost is, I wouldn't know, but it's much cheaper for a North Vietnamese or a Cong to kill, because life over there means nothing at all to them. I mean, when you're putting it on a dollar value, I simply am not qualified to say what the dollar value is, except to say how much the war cost and divide that into the number of casualties on the other side. So it's something that's rather debatable. It's costly to us, but while it's costly to us to kill the enemy, it's very costly us to save and keep our casualties down.
Mm-hmm. And one other thing, what is the latest figure on American servicemen wounded in Vietnam that you know of?
Over 100,000.
Well, it's kind of strange, but I distinctly remember 2 years ago reading in the papers and having it heard over the newscast that it was something like 180,000, and since then it's actually been, it seems to have been reduced. Now, I don't know whether I've just been dreaming, but I suspect I haven't.
Well, no, I don't know where you got your figures from, but the 25,000 fatality was just reached about 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Well, I know the fatality figures, but I'm speaking here of the figures on wounded.
Well, and the whole figure, I don't know where you got your figures, and so I can't discuss it, but I'm only speaking from memory at the moment without the actual figures in front of me, and I'm relating myself to the American casualties. And what you may be confused with, it was also including the South Vietnamese casualties, both killed and wounded.
So you can't really say...
No, I can't. I don't have the figures in front of me, but my recollection, and I think I'm pretty accurate, is a little over 25,000 killed and over 100,000 wounded.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for calling. This is Night Call in New York. Our national telephone number is area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. Remember, you may call, collect, and we welcome your calls, and your comments, and your conversations tonight as we continue with the question, what are we doing in Vietnam? Our guest is Congressman F. Edward Hebert, calling in from Washington. We'll take our next call from South Bend, Indiana. Mr. Phillips is hearing Night Call over WSBT. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Thank you. Good evening.
Good evening.
First of all, I'd like to say that I'm not either a dove or a hawk, but several questions arise in my mind, and I'm very confused about this war, first of all. But I remember a quote from U.S. News, May 16, 1966, and I have the evidence here. Of the Army's 16 combat divisions, 5 are in Europe, 2 in Korea, 3 plus part of a 4th are in Vietnam. Of the 6 combat divisions in reserve, 4 are no longer in combat-ready status. Now, there are approximately 5 in Vietnam. My first question to you is, and I have 2 questions, is, first of all, I think this represents a serious shortage of troops. I'd like to know, in your opinion, how long can we last in terms of troop manpower and supplies and resources and money around the world?
That's a mouthful you had.
Yeah. Yeah, true.
But I'll tell you, as far as the reserves are concerned, or as far as the combatant readiness of the reserves are concerned, we do not have the full strength or what we should have in combatant reserves. For some unknown reason, Mr. McNamara and the President resisted calling up reserves and have resisted calling up the reserves, the reserve components of our military strength. 2 years ago, against the wishes of Mr. McNamara and the President, who said he wouldn't use it, the House of Representatives and the Senate passed a legislative provision on an appropriation act which gave the President the power to call up reserves of the National Guard under certain conditions. Now, instead of not using it, the administration used it, and on tomorrow, as a matter of fact, in the House, the House will conclude the action by repeating that language at the request of the administration. I do not think the reserves have been kept ready. I think they've fallen far short, as the reason why the Defense Department under Mr. McNamara and the President refused to use them is something I cannot answer.
Then you think that perhaps if they had gone in there first in full strength in the Congress, that might be diminished now. We would not have to be expending our strength away.
I have advocated that all the time, and I've advocated that from the very beginning, as I said earlier tonight on the program. You never pull a gun unless you're ready to pull the trigger. We did not go in there to win.
Mm-hmm.
We went in there to hold, which I think was disastrous and a very great tragedy. If we had gone in there to win in the beginning, and we'd used our full complement and our full strength, I feel confident that the conflict would be over today. Unfortunately, the administration and Mr. McNamara did not do that. They did not bomb Haiphong. They did not bomb Hanoi. They did not bomb the areas that were contributing to supplying men and materiel against us. Instead of that, we were just... Well, I put it this way to try to dramatize it. It would be the same if Jack Dempsey was in the ring and you were fighting him and you were trying to punch him and all he was doing was ducking instead of hitting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we were doing.
I see. Now, my other question deals with a credibility gap that I feel is present in the reporting of U.S. casualties versus enemy casualties. Now, in one recent encounter, and for life of me, I can't remember the name, but I did jot down the figure. The figure of 1,568 Viet Cong were killed. They were fighting against the Americans, and 30 Americans were killed. I've noticed from many GIs and many official reports that the Viet Cong is cited to be one of the best and most persistent group of fighting men in the world. Now, how would you explain the fact that would you say that our troops are so much better than the Viet Cong that we would only lose 30 and that they would lose almost 1,500?
Oh, yes, indeed. We have, that's what I'm trying to point out, that we have the superiority. And the first question asked me, this is Mr. Lederer last night, I think, because the gentleman who was on the program, said we were losing the war. We are not losing the war because we are calling the shots. And it depends how much pressure or offense that we apply as to the result. We far superior. We're superior in manpower. We're superior in gun power, in weaponry, and training. However, we are fighting a war that we've never fought before. We're fighting a guerrilla-type war. But whenever we have a confrontation between our troops and the enemy troops, the casualties are very, very heavy.
Then you feel that there's actually no credibility gap in the reporting.
Now you said something else. I think there's a great credibility gap in reporting. Now, if we're talking about reporting, the official reporting on the part of the American commander as to the casualties and the accuracy of the count, I do not think there's a credibility gap. If we're talking about a credibility gap on reporting as to what is going on, I think we have a very slanted, across-the-board part of reporting.
I see. And today, one last question. I don't want to monopolize this thing. But today on CBS News, I heard that the commander of U.S. forces in Vietnam made a reply to President Thieu of South Vietnam, in which he said that the U.S. cannot and will not pull out next year. Now, I remember McNamara in 1962 saying that we were going to pull out by the end of 1962. How long do you think, and you no doubt have access to many sources that average citizens would not, how long do you think that this war will actually last?
I cannot tell you how long it will actually last, and I do not know what report was made on CBS today, because even if I knew, it wouldn't make it true. I'm using my authority, Lieutenant General Walt of the Marines, who retired. And he made the statement, and I think he's a well-recognized authority, that after it ends, we will be in Vietnam for 14 to 15 more years. Now, as shocking as that may sound on a basic statement, keep in mind that we're in Europe. The war ended there in 1945, and we are still there. Take Korea, we are still there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as the war coming to a successful conclusion, or a withdrawal of or a ceasefire, that is part, and I can't venture how it'll last as long as we do not apply complete pressure and bring to fruition the victory that we must have.
Mr. Phillips, thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Congressman, we'll return right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Congressman Edward Hebert after station identification. Call it a social pressure valve. The voice of the ghetto. The voice of disgust. The voice of hope. Call it what you will, it's the voice of the people. Night Call lets people talk. And experts on the phone anywhere in the country or world offer answers to some of the problems. Having a heart-to-heart squawk. At least it gets people talking, first about their problems and eventually to each other. Night Call has a potential cast of 200 million Americans, and we now cover 50 stations in 40 cities. It could just be the most important listening post on the air today, because it starts people talking. A program you should listen to. A forum to speak for yourself. If we don't start talking to each other, we'll end up shouting, and there's no telling where we'll wind up after that. Night Call, every weeknight on this station. Speak for yourself. Collect on Night Call, area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Congressman Edward Hebert about what are we doing in Vietnam. Again, Del Shields.
And as we move into the second half hour of Night Call, we were talking with Congressman F. Edward Hebert from Washington, and prior to station identification, the congressman, I think, shocked me just a bit when he stated that we can look forward to being in Vietnam for the next 14 to 15 years. Is this the general consensus of opinion in Washington?
It's consensus of opinion of those who are knowledgeable and in the background of what has happened already. As I pointed out, it's a shocking thing, as you say, shocked you when I said 14 to 15 years. Keep in mind that we're in Europe for 23 years. And we're in Korea for almost 20 years. So it's not very shocking when you mention the fact of what has gone before and what the situation is.
We'll continue accepting calls. We'll take our next Night Call listener from Miami, Florida. Mrs. Bostic is hearing Night Call over WAME. Welcome to Night Call. Mrs. Bostic?
Yes.
Welcome to Night Call.
Yeah.
You've expressed your disagreement with the administration on trying to provide a democratic government for South Vietnam. I'd like to know what, in your opinion, is the legitimate purpose of the United States, if any, in persisting in bombing North Vietnam on the contention that they're endeavoring to prevent South Vietnam from having a democratic form of government.
Well, now, you see, your presumption is if I may say so, very respectfully on it, that your presumption is that we want to establish a democratic government. That is not our stated purpose.
What is our purpose?
Our stated purpose is the self-determination of the people. If they want a democracy, that is their right. And this is where I differ a great deal, and I may use the word it loosely, in a do-good sense. I do not believe in reforming the world. As I pointed out, if they want a democracy, that's their problem. If they don't want a democracy, they shouldn't have it. In other words, we should not try to impose a democratic or republican form of government as we know it in this country, in the right of self-determination of a people. I'm just back from Europe. I'm back from Athens, from Greece. And our State Department frowns on the fact there was a coup there. Well, all right, if there was a coup, it's their business. It's not our business. Now, we can't go around the world and say we won't accept your friendship and we won't take you and we won't do business with you unless you have a democratic or republican form of government the same as we have. As a matter of fact, the only friends we got in Europe are dictators. Salazar. Franco. The only friend we had in Cuba was a dictator, so we overthrew him.
Well, do you think Cuba is other than a dictator?
What's that, please? What, I did not get the question.
Do you think Cuba is other than a dictator, the present president of South Vietnam?
He was elected in an election. No, he's not a dictator.
You can't believe that election was anything but rigged, can you?
How's that, please?
You can't believe that election was a free democratic election.
I have no reason to believe otherwise.
Well, only the people in power were allowed to vote, and not even a reasonable proportion of the South Vietnamese people were allowed to vote.
I have no knowledge.
Nobody that was for neutrality was allowed to vote.
I have no knowledge of that being a fact.
Well, it's been published by all the news services. Well, may I ask you, Representative Bethel, what is your conception of a win?
Because the newspapers publish something on the television or radio, say it doesn't make it a fact. As a matter of fact, I think they say a lot of things that are not facts.
Oh, well, I think it's the most precious institution we have left, I believe, is the
press. I do think that the free press is the most precious thing we have, but with that comes a responsibility, which I'm afraid and sorry to say is not being discharged.
Well, thank you. May I ask you one more question?
Certainly.
What is your idea? What would you conceive to be a victory on our part in Vietnam? What does that mean?
A victory on our part in Vietnam would be the return almost to the status quo of the North Vietnamese not invading the South. And,
well, they didn't begin to invade it until we troops and force over there.
What's that, please?
They didn't begin to invade the South until the United States, until Lyndon Johnson sent our combat forces over there. They didn't begin to invade it.
I don't think that's an accurate statement.
Well, I'm sorry. Thank you.
Thank you for calling. Our next caller is from Great Neck, Long Island. Miss Tillinghast is listening to Night Call over WRVR-FM. Welcome to Night Call.
Thank you. I have a comment. Sir, you seem to have some say on the Selective Service System.
I can't understand the lady.
You have some say in the Selective Service System?
What? I just don't understand.
Do you have some say in the Selective Service System?
Not in the system, except that I am chairman of the Oversight Committee of the draft. And the only say that I have is to see that the draft law is carried out with the intent and in other words, what the Congress has passed. I do not have a say except to see that the law is recognized.
Well, I think it's one of the most undemocratic parts of our government.
Well, of course, that's an opinion.
Well, firstly, I think it's totally ridiculous to ship off boys from the ghettos and then expect them to fight in support of our government, which spends more money on this war than on poverty. And also, I think the system is totally corrupt.
Well, this, of course, is an opinion. We've had the draft since the war. Since we've had all wars, we've always had drafts. And it's the only way in which we can defend our nation.
Well, I don't think that is...
Well, I mean, it's whatever an opinion is. I respect your opinion. I have a different opinion.
I feel that if we could, in some way, set up some sort of volunteer army... That
what?
Way.
We can't have a volunteer army. We've explored that, and we've done everything we can to find out a substitute for a draft. History has shown that there's no substitute for the draft. We've had a draft all the time throughout our history, and a volunteer army would be very, we couldn't supply our needs.
But wouldn't that be because people would not support wars?
Well, people have very peculiar ideas about many things. people, a lot of people wouldn't like to have any laws on the books. And the fact that we have to pass the law doesn't make it popular. But we have to have law. We have to defend this nation. We have to have strong people. We have to have leadership. We have to have understanding. We have to have patriotic people. We have to have people who must understand that the reason we will be able to talk like you and I are talking right now in complete disagreement, that the only reason we are able to do what we are doing now is because somebody died to allow us to do it.
Well, what would you feel about a lottery?
A lottery is the phoniest thing I've ever heard of in my life. There's never been any suggestion for a true lottery. It's something that's thrown out as a catch-all for politicians who are trying to seek office. A lottery is the most misquoted misnomer that I can think of. And then the law that we have on the books now considers the lottery. Even the President's Commission under Mr. Blake Marshall, which recommended a lottery, couldn't explain to the Committee on Armed Services what a lottery was. And when you talk about a lottery, for instance, a pure lottery, if I may reduce it to the simple, is a bingo game or a lotto party, where you put all the balls in one big bowl and draw them out. But it's not a lottery if you draw some balls out or some numbers out before you start drawing the numbers. And that is a type of so-called lottery that's been suggested by the people who have cried and screamed that we want a lottery. They would eliminate from the drawing those numbers of people who would be eliminated because of health or hardship or something, so you don't have a real lottery.
Well, Congressman, in view of the strong feelings about the draft presently in the country, is there any studies or are there any studies being conducted to possibly change some of the laws of selective service?
Good God Almighty, we studied the thing for 2 years before we passed the law. We had everybody in this country that was able and willing to come in and testify. The President appointed a committee under Mr. Blake Marshall to recommend, and then they recommended. The Armed Services Committee, under the direction of Congressman Rivers of South Carolina, appointed a special committee composed, I think, of one of the finest panels I've ever known in my life, headed by General Mark Clark, on which was also Colonel Red Blake, the famous West Pointer, and former Ambassador Murphy, and Sterling Cole, the former director of the International Atomic Energy Commission. You just name, we had all these people who studied long and hard, and we held hearings day in and day out. And then we passed this law after all these hearings. This was no slipshod law, no slipshod measure.
Thank you, Ms. Tillinghast.
Consideration and open consideration. Anybody who wanted to testify could come in and testify if they desired.
Thank you for calling, Ms. Tillinghast. Thank you. This is Night Call in New York, area code 212-749-3311. That's our national telephone number. Remember, you may call us collect. We welcome your comments and your conversations tonight as we continue exploring what are we doing in Vietnam. Our guest calling in from Washington, Congressman F. Edward Hebert. Our next caller, Mr. Monahan, who is hearing Night Call over KBON-FM in Omaha, Nebraska. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Hello, Congressman.
Yes, sir.
Well, it's nice to talk to you.
Very happy to talk with you.
Well, I heard all about this Vietnam deal and all this stuff. I wonder, Congressman, if many of these people would ever read Admiral Meehan's book. Did you ever read Admiral Meehan's book?
No, I didn't have the good fortune to read.
Well, I tell you what you do, Congressman. Go down there to the library and get it. It will tell you all about the Pacific problems that we have. I mean in the Pacific.
Well, of course, the problems in the Pacific were well known, but unfortunately, a lot of us do not read the signs on the highways and the directions on the road.
Well,
I have on tape an interview with General Claire Chennault.
Well, after all, General
Chennault, over 20 years ago, gave the formula for peace in Asia.
Well, Admiral Meehan gave the peace in 1907 and 1900.
Well, of course, Chennault was a couple of decades after him, but this was prior, and I was in China in 1947, just before Chiang Kai-shek was forced off the mainland.
Well, wasn't that a pathetic thing?
How's that, please?
Wasn't that a pathetic thing?
It was the most pathetic thing I've ever known.
And Meehan tells about that.
And I think that the American people are those people who advocate a coalition government to take a lesson from what happened in China just prior to that when General George Marshall was sent to China as the ambassador to China, and the coalition government resulted in the communists taking over. And wherever you had any semblance of a coalition government, it ends up not as a coalition government, but as a communist government.
Well, isn't that the truth?
Mr. Monahan, thank you for calling.
You bet I will.
Thank you. This is Night Call in New York. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Congressman Edward Hebert after station identification. Listen to the voices of Night Call.
Large numbers of black people in this country are coming to the point where almost no action, violent or nonviolent, legal or illegal, is looked upon as being the sort of action that will help. And I think that's a dangerous point for us, where we reach the point where nothing is likely to help us. And it means, I think, almost the beginning of suicide.
Julian Bond, a black politician, is pessimistic. And a white ethics professor has faith.
I don't agree we're all upset. In spite of the many faults of the white people, I think there's a strong reservoir of compassion in a lot of white people in this country, and a strong desire to see that the black man does get his right.
These voices, plus your own voice of question or comment, are Night Call. Speak for yourself. Speak for yourself. Collect on Night Call. Area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Congressman Edward Hebert about what are we doing in Vietnam. Again, Del Shields.
Congressman, just before we return to our Night Call listeners, I'd like to pose a question to you.
Yeah.
We were discussing earlier the responsibilities of the press in this country. Now, there are many critics of the Vietnamese War who feel that the government is not giving us a fair shake in terms of information, and many of the critics of the war have stated that much of the problem is due to the fact that most of the information is shrouded in secrecy. Now, where is the fault?
Well, I think that the credibility gap as far as the Pentagon under Mr. McNamara was very wide. I don't think there's any doubt about it, and the news is being managed as well as possible. And there's much to be said on both sides of how the news is being managed in a time of conflict or a time of war. Now, on the other side of the coin, as far as the reporting is concerned, and as far as the presentation of the news is concerned on the television, I personally think that the television is one of the most dangerous enemies we've got in this country today. Now, and I say that with all due respect to my friends in the television business. But the news is so slanted that you can convey certain things to the American people that really are not quite accurate. And that goes for reporting. And that goes for the presentation. For everybody in the newspaper business today wants to be a columnist, wants to be an authority. And a newspaper reporter has great power at his hand. He can write a story of the same set of facts, write it up or down or in the middle, and can easily sway the reader without the reader even knowing he's been swayed. Now, I give you my credentials for making such a statement. I am a reporter. I was a reporter for 23 years before I came to Congress, and I was a city editor. So I think I'm qualified to speak about the power that a reporter has in his hands.
Well, if the news was being managed, as you said, during the earlier part of the war, how is it possible that the press could report objectively?
let's put it this way. And in use of the term of managed news, it's very loosely, all news is managed, whether for good or for bad. But start to begin with when the original story breaks on any subject matter. The reporter, the individual reporter, is there. He reports in, say, for instance, on a police beat. He reports in by telephone to his city desk or to the news desk. That rewrite man writes the story from what the reporter has told him verbally. And it either deletes or it plays up what he wants to play up. He then takes that piece of copy and hands it to the editor. The editor copies that out and deletes what he wants to delete or adds what he wants to add. Then it goes to your copy desk where your headline writer puts it on. And he puts the emphasis on what he wants to put on. And ultimately it's played up in the news as well. So news
is managed. I'm using that in a broad term. Now, what I am afraid of, for instance, you take, there are some newspapers in the country, and particularly in Washington itself, you couldn't get a conservative point of view put over in the Washington Post if you tried with dynamite. Yet anything that's on the liberal side, on the side the Washington Post wants to play up, they play it up the way they want to play it up.
Well, aren't there...
And all the news is slanted to the Washington Post policy.
Well, are there other newspapers that have a conservative stand that don't print liberal news?
I don't know of any. I mean, this is a general impact in the whole setup. Of course, we all have our own point of views. You take, for instance, in television on your broadcast, your news broadcast, the lifting of an eyebrow, the funny look on the face of some of these people. It carries more with the old Chinese proverb, a picture's better than a thousand words. Well, the expression on the face of a news commentator is better than any thousand words he can utter.
Are you saying, in effect, sir, that we do not have a free press in this country?
Oh, no, I'm saying we have a free press. There's no doubt about it, having a free press. But that free press, I think, does not discharge its responsibility. With freedom, the freedom of the press carries with it a great responsibility. And I'm afraid that responsibility is not discharged properly in the ultimate, in the whole. And I say this as a defender of the right of the press. I say that as a defender of the First Amendment. I say it as a man who grew up in the newspaper business. Being a member of Congress is not my profession. I'm a reporter on sabbatical leave. The business I know is the newspaper business. And I don't mean the editor of the high school paper.
We'll accept some more calls, sir. We'll take a call from Boston. Christopher West is listening to Night Call over WBUR-FM. Welcome to Night Call.
Hello. Hello, Congressman.
Yeah.
First of all, I'm worried that in seeking, and I believe sincerely, as the United States is, self-determination for Vietnam, that we're making a mistake and we might be fighting on the wrong side. I'm not convinced that the countries are two countries. I think Vietnam might be one country, basically. The success of the guerrilla operations astounds me. I fear that they might have a popular base, which would mean we're fighting for a popular, against a popular group. And thirdly, more specifically, and maybe you could comment on it, I think Secretary Rusk said, in answering Mr. Church on TV a while back, that there were 40,000 North Vietnamese troops in the South now. Now, I'm wondering if this is the enemy. Are these the people? Are we bombing North Vietnam because of these 40,000 troops?
Well, let's start back at the beginning. You posed about four or five different questions in your one presentation. Now, are we fighting on the wrong side? No, we're fighting on our side. You examine history in recently in our own times, in our own generation. What country that the communists have taken over has become a country of self-determination or a democratic form of government?
Well,
every area in which the communists have moved has remained communist. Germany, East Germany, East Berlin, Korea, North Korea, anywhere where the communists have moved, they have not been allowed to determine what type of government they want. They have been communist governments.
Well,
now,
let me try
to answer your question in a short time. Now, as to the guerrilla warfare, the fighting, the more atrocities have been committed in South Vietnam than the mind can conjure or imagine. Villages have been wiped out. The elected officials have been, their heads have been, they've been decapitated and their heads stuck on poles and stuck in, and complete terror has reigned. So they're not the popular people. Now, as to the 40,000 troops infiltrated, this indicates and shows to you the extent of the North Vietnamese coming down and infiltrating with the Viet Cong in South Vietnam.
Well, it's important, I think, to remember the Viet Cong are South Vietnamese, and I agree they're not I mean, certainly they're not totally popular or anything. When you say we're fighting on our side, I think that's largely true, and in and of itself might be largely justifiable, but I would be more interested in self-determination, and if the self-determination of South Vietnam or Vietnam is against their interests...
I couldn't agree with you more. I think self-determination is a thing.
What's it against their interests?
I'm more in favor of self-determination in the United States, too.
Yes. What if they want to be communists, even if they're mistaken or misguided?
If they want to be, but keep in mind that we did not go into Vietnam on our own. We went in there as a part of a treaty. The tomorrow morning, tomorrow afternoon, tomorrow night, that the South Vietnamese government tells us they don't want us there, we are out.
Well, I didn't really think too much of the South Vietnamese government, especially after the Geneva, you know, the treaty was formed after the Geneva Accords, and
well,
I thought the division
president
was supposed to be...
Mr. West, Mr. West, thank you for calling.
That the damn government fell.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for calling, sir. We want...
Thank you to Hawking back now and cross the oceans. And go back to Lebanon.
Yes, sir.
When the Marines moved in there, they were moved in there at the request of the Lebanese government.
Yes, sir.
And as soon as they had performed that duty, now, of course, keep in mind and don't for the moment think that I advocate America saving the world. I don't. Right. I think our foreign policy should be a very simple policy. Ask ourselves one question. What is best for America? And do it. Never mind what the other countries think about us. Let's do it for America.
Yes.
And what we think is the right thing to do, and not what somebody else thinks about us.
Right.
Thank you for calling.
Very much, sir.
Thank you so much for calling.
Right.
Congressman, do you have any hope for the negotiations that are currently taking place in Paris?
I frankly do not have any immediate hope for the negotiation. There could be some good come out of it, but the only time the good will come out of it, and I'm in favor of the negotiation. The only time the good will come is when the North Vietnamese realize they are fighting a very futile war that they can't conceivably win. I think psychology enters into it a great deal. I think, and I can't read the Oriental or the Asian mind, but I'm just guessing, I guess you'd call it, when they feel that they can't win and they may have a hope that after the next election they'd have a better chance. And the information that I have, and I think it's very accurate information, that the North Vietnamese people are being misinformed about what is going on, and they're being misled a great deal as to their successes and to their failures. But I only think, and I've always thought, that while we seek a political settlement, and a political settlement is the only solution to the peace, we cannot get that political agreement unless we have the pressure and the impact of the military success.
Congressman, I want to thank you so much for being with us tonight on Night Call.
It's been a pleasure, and I want to say to you that I think these type of discussions that are open and free are the only answer to a credibility gap of managed press on this information.
Thank you for being with us. This is Del Shields in New York. Good night and peace.
Night Call, the new nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tomorrow night, same time, same station. What Are We Doing in Vietnam? Part 4 with Marine Corps Colonel William Corson, who says we're losing that other war for the hearts and minds of the Vietnamese people. Listen tomorrow night. Discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, and National Urban Coalition.